Blog Talk Radio.
All right, that was Marlo Moore, All of My Health. This is Crystal P. Willingham on the Glam Network Radio with Power, Triumph, and Influence. I'm so glad you joined us tonight. And we're going to get started differently tonight. There's been a turn of events that has just been unbelievably hard to make adjustments for, even in my own home. And so we're going to shift gears just a little bit. My guest is going to join us in just a few minutes. And we're going to talk about today's events. We're going to have a little girl talk tonight. So I don't want to alarm anyone. And, yes, this is the show, and we're still going on. But we're going to take a different route tonight. So before we get into what's really going on, I want to take a little station break, and we're going to play a bill. And we're going to come right back, and we're going to talk with my guest, Erica Strong, motivational speaker, life coach, celebrity, stylist, and author. I'm so excited that she was able to join me tonight, so stick around. We're going to pay some bills right quick, and then we'll come right back.
Shulamite Women Magazine presents Transform My Now with Dr. Belinda John, Royal Palm Beach, Florida, August 5th through the 6th. Your speakers include Pastor Natalie Green, Pastor Nancy Abiera, Apostle Diane Brooks, financial mentor Shani St. Veal, relationship coach Danny Spikes, and celebrity makeup artist Stacey Mossop. Transform My Now, August 5th through the 6th, 2016, in Royal Palm Beach, Florida. For more information, visit their website, ShulamiteWomen.com. This show segment is brought to you by Rise Management and Consulting Firm. Rise Management and Consulting Firm is helping you rebuild your credit. Learn how to understand your credit, read your credit score, understand your credit rights, repair your credit, legally watch your credit score improve within 30 days. You'll get consultations, unlimited email access, and 10% off your first product purchase. For more information, visit www.risemcf.com. That's www.risemcf.com. Or visit them on Facebook, Rise Management and Consulting Firm, helping you rebuild your credit.
Our deepest condolences, our shock and our horror at what transpired last night. Only facts aren't known, but from the evidence that's been presented, the video that was taken, nobody should be shot and killed in Minnesota for a traffic taillight being out of function. Nobody should be shot and killed while sitting still in a car without a very, very different kind of response. So I'm heartbroken for Minnesota because what I've heard in the last few hours from very serious African American men and women who have come to me how they've been pulled over, singled out, and treated very differently because of the race from how white Minnesotans expect to be covered. Would this have happened if there was a passenger who was a driver and a passenger who was white? I don't think it would have. So I'm forced to confront that. I think all of us in Minnesota personally confront that this kind of racism exists. And as I was saying, come on about all of us. The violence, we're going to do whatever we can to see if that doesn't happen. It will continue to happen.
That was Governor Mark Dayton of Minnesota, Democrat of Minnesota, and he released that statement just a few hours ago. I think it was about at 3 o'clock. Very powerful things he said. First, he said that if this was a white passenger, he does not believe that this incident would have occurred. And then, towards the end of that clip, you heard him say that racism still exists. And that's very, very powerful statements coming from the governor of Minnesota, where Philando Castile was killed last night as his girlfriend went Facebook Live and actually aired the entire incident from the moment that he was shot until she was not able to communicate with us anymore. And so tonight, my guest, Erica Strong, she's an author. She's a speaker. She's a coach. She's a celebrity stylist. And her and I are going to talk tonight. Just have a little girl talk and talk about some things, which this is one of them. And also Alton Sterling, who was, he was, you know, just brutally, without question, he was shot the night before. And then as of today, a gentleman was found hanging in Piedmont Park here in Atlanta, Georgia, where we live. And so there's an ongoing investigation even for that. Getting a little saucy around here and tight-lipped and intense. And so we're going to break a little ice tonight, and we're just going to kind of talk girl talk. So I want to introduce to you my guest tonight, Erica Strong. Erica, are you here?
I am here. I am here. Thank you so much, Crystal.
Thank you for joining us tonight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I called Erica before we went on the air, and I told her, I said, you know, I really can't pick up business as usual today. I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I turmoiled yesterday and this morning, even about doing the show. I kind of felt like I didn't want to. I just didn't want to. You know, I posted on Facebook yesterday, my dreams just don't seem important right now.
Mm-hmm.
My grind.
Wow.
Does not seem important right now. I need to take a minute and really assess what's going on. I don't know about you, Erica, but I broke down. I wept. I cried.
Right.
And then I looked at my son, who was 7 years old, and I'm thinking,
wow,
I gotta bring him up in another era.
Yeah.
But you know, Erica, you know what really got to me?
Mm-hmm.
what I think now we're experiencing what our grandparents and great-grandparents were looking towards when they looked at our grandparents, you know, walking out the door for school, and will my child return, will my son return, you know? Did that run across your mind as well?
Absolutely. And, you know, this morning I was sad in myself. Like, I thought I was getting up in business as usual. And, you know, I checked Facebook in that clip with the mom in Louisiana talking, and her 15-year-old son is sobbing because he saw all the footage, you know, that was taken of his dad's final days. And so, like you say, you know, I can think of what my grandparents and great-grandparents thought, but for ours, it's like in your face. Like, I've never seen someone gunned down before, you know, before our cell phones and our smart, you know, smartphones and our cameras. So it's really given a voice to our great-grandparents who had all of this injustice happening to them but had no way to prove it. Like, you know, the camera can't lie. The video can't lie. So it's actually helping, you know, to let people see what's been going on all these years, but just it has never been shown until, like, today. Because even with after I watched that first interview with the son sobbing, then the next interview comes up with the lady and her boyfriend in the car, and I'm thinking, like, is this real? You know, I just, I could not, like, I promise you, I was numb. And when you did your introduction, I had no idea that they found someone hanging in Piedmont Park. Today.
Yeah.
I had no idea. Yeah, my jaw just literally fell open when you said that.
Yeah, I couldn't believe my daughter actually texted me this morning, and she says, "Be careful, there's a man hanging in Piedmont Park." And I said, "What?" You know, So I'm going to read the statement that our mayor released today, 2 hours ago. He said, "I am deeply saddened by the loss of a young man's life last night in Piedmont Park. This disturbing event demands our full attention. The Atlanta Police Department, APD, is conducting a robust investigation into this death, and I have asked to receive regular briefings on the status of the investigation. We have also referred the case to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Everything we have seen suggests that there was no foul play involved, but I want to state clearly and unequivocally that we will not prejudge the situation. APD will share all evidence discovered in the course of this investigation. We ask for the public support and cooperation as we work to resolve this matter," Mayor Kasim Reed. And so, I think he had to say something. They normally do not do public reports on suicides, but in light of things that have been taking place, he had to say something.
Absolutely.
Someone had to, you know, make a statement. And so, so there's a young man. And, you know, I told my daughters today, I said, well, let this due process run its course. Let's not assume that he was lynched. Because people take their causes very seriously. And he may have taken his cause very seriously to make a statement. And people will do that even in death. That's why I have suicide bombers and, you know, you believe what you believe, and you dog hard about it, you'll give your life for it. That's what you do, you know.
Exactly.
So, yeah, he that's a powerful turn of events that's happened in the last 72 hours. And I don't know, Erica, my mind is blown because, like you said, you know, we have phones now. And so we saw this thing happen as it took place. And and we don't have snapshots anymore. We don't open a history book and see a snapshot anymore. Now this is live and in color, you know, in our faces. And I'm devastated.
That was terrifying for me to watch. It was terrifying for me to watch that man lay on the ground and see him in his last days. And then I literally, like, I just started crying when I thought about his son having to watch this over and over. And the mother said, this is not the baby. This is the oldest, 15. This is the oldest. So he has younger siblings that have to deal with it. And I promise you, like, I'm a mother of three girls. So, you know, I'm always, you know, concerned for my children. But it's not as pertinent as it is for the boys. And my oldest daughter is pregnant, and she's having a boy. And do you know that's what I thought about? Like, oh, my God. You know, she's having a boy. how are we going to handle this? And that's a shame that I would even think that.
Yes. And you have to plan your life now centered around extra protection, you know, protecting your grandson, you know. You know what? It's not even just our children, but it's the father of our children. You know, I'm thinking about my husband, and I'm thinking about my son's father. One day, you know, just going to the store turns into something else, you know.
Absolutely.
Last night, this man was pulled over for a busted taillight, and now he's not here anymore, you know. And in both cases,
He was licensed to carry a gun. Mm-hmm.
And he informed the police officer that he had it. This is what Diamond was saying. Her name is Diamond. This is what Diamond was saying in the video, that, you know, he told him he had a gun and everything. Mm-hmm. And this is what got my attention. The police officer was in total freak out mode. And he said, I told him. And you know, my thing is, I think things were so escalated that now even our law enforcement are on pins and needles and anxious and nervous. Still, and I'm not giving any excuses to that, but that's also something that we could, you know, think about. And that's just on the side of humanity, you know. We're thinking about humanity at this point. At this moment, we're talking about humanity. But, you know, I can go spiritual on you, too. And I want to, you know, as a woman of God, I'm not just, you know, doing radio, but as a prophet, you know, I've had some time with the Lord about this kind of stuff, and most of us have seen it coming, you know. And this is not a release at the last minute or after the fact at all, but as some of us who have eyesight into the spirit realm, we have to be more vocal. You know, it doesn't matter if someone believes you or not. You know, we have to be like John the Baptist and just cry loud and spare not. You know, John the Baptist was in the wilderness screaming, prepare the way of the Lord, he's coming. We have to do the same thing. You know, we have to do the same thing. So I wanted to have this dialogue with you and in front of our studio audience. Girl, I'm all the way in television now. We're on radio, but I'm talking in front of our live listening audience to have this discussion, you know, with you. So tell us what the climate was in your shop today. You told me earlier that
it was kind of
a conversation.
Yeah, that was it. It was so somber. It was the feeling of, like, what are we going to do? You know, what do we do next? And, like, one of my stylists, and so funny, she's just the cutest little thing. She's so small. But she said that she's licensed to carry. And, you know, of course, as women, we think, like, really, are you carrying a weapon? But one of the things that we said was, you know, when they decided to, you know, push the law that, you know, anybody that is licensed can carry a weapon, they forgot that, you know, that guy in the white T-shirt in the locks that could be a corporate attorney during the day, but this is what he liked to wear in the afternoon, also has, you know, a license to carry. Or, you know, the guy in the suit has a license to carry. The guy in the cowboy boots has a license to carry. And the guy in the sneakers has a license to carry. You know, so what makes one, you know, any less vulnerable for this than just the color of their skin? You know, like, did they think about that before, you know, when they started to pass a law that, every black guy doesn't have a criminal record, and he is going to be able to have a license to carry.
Yes. And now,
so yeah, that
but,
was,
you know, I noticed B.O. Hughley said, you know, where's the NRA now, you know?
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
not speaking out. I've never heard a peep from them. And they probably won't. But there's several, you know, government and civil entities that are silent right now that we should be hearing from. Several of our political leaders and civil leaders are quiet. And I don't think it's because they don't have anything to say. But I think also that there's a shift here, and that the generation that now needs to carry this baton and go further have to be more verbal as well. And I also think that the church has to be a lot more verbal right now.
Absolutely.
My thoughts are kind of controversial right now with the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I think churches of all races should be speaking right now. I think white churches,
absolutely.
And I don't like compartmentalizing the body like this, but
well,
our white preachers need to be speaking up.
It's
a shame that's how it is, but our white preachers need to be speaking up as well as our black preachers. This can't be just the responsibility of black preachers. This should be the plight of the kingdom of God, period, you know? And so I saw, you know, a few people actually mentioned that. So the climate in the shop today is pretty sobering and heavy.
And so the
question
heavy.
Is what to do next. Wow.
What to do next, And, you know, some are married, some have sons, and, you know, others are just nephews and brothers. And, you know, just thinking about, you know, man, that could have been someone in my family or, you know, like and when we start seeing each other as such, you know, that we can really come together and really put an end to it. Because I really feel like because we have had decades of losing that unity that we had when, you know, Martin Luther King and, you know, the other great leaders were, you know, shouting from the mountaintop, you know, we were all united. So it's just time to be united. But not just united as black, white, united as humans, you know, not just segregating like, oh, I'm going to unite with my sisters, or I'm going to unite with my brothers. It's a unity that goes from, you know, from just the humanity perspective and not just the race perspective.
Yes, humanity, exactly. From a human perspective, you know, we have this is how we have to look at this now. And I don't think I'm questioning how these two situations were de-escalated at all. I saw some video footage of a couple of other races who were having encounters with police with officers and law enforcement, and I heard one officer plead with a man to put his weapon down. Please put your weapon down, please. He didn't want to shoot him, you know.
Right.
And so I'm wondering, you know, when are we looked upon as humans and not animals? You know, it's amazing what the color of your skin speaks to other people.
Right.
This is amazing to me. It's absolutely amazing. You know, we're talking to my children. We're talking about the children of Israel and their days as slaves as well, and talking to them about the impact that these circumstances are going to have on their future. The future of our husbands and our sons, our nephews, you know. There's a gentleman, I forget what university, I think it's Oakland University, and this gentleman is, he's an attorney, he teaches, and he's the president. And he's calling a conference call tonight to talk, you know, and have people on a panel to have some discussion. I think that's great, you know. And now we know who else is going to have a discussion. You know, when are we going to talk, and what are we going to talk about? How are we going to resolve this issue here? You know, we're starting to look
but
like
then even
world
a step
countries.
Further. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But then a step further, like, okay, conversation, great. But a conversation with a call to action, and not a call to be vigilant, not a call to anger, a call to action. And then I just really feel, because, you know, my message and everything that I speak about and am about is about love. And even in something so chaotic as this, a call to action can truly be a call to love. Like really, you know, pulling together out of love, pulling together out of unity, pulling together to highlight the things that, you know, that are not fair, that are, you know, that are not equal, but still out of love, not out of hate, not out of anger, but out of love. And I know that we can get it, so we can have those conversations, but then what do we do when we get up from the conversations? And I think that's where I get really frustrated with, okay, we talked about it, but now let's do something, you know?
Let's do something,
And
it begins. It begins with talking. It begins dialogue, and then it begins with action. And then, what action do we take? You know, we need to know. You know what I think too, Erica? We just don't know the level of influence that is in our government. We have let people in our government positions slide through the cracks. We don't know who our who our representatives are. We don't know who our city council members are and what their backgrounds are. We don't study these people before they're elected. And then we have, you know, those that are head of our police departments that are set and appointed by the mayors of these cities. We don't study them. We need to start working from the ground up, you know. Okay, you have a boss, and you have a boss, and you have a boss, and you have a boss. We need to go up the chain of command and start paying attention to who we voted or didn't vote for in these positions of leadership, you know. And, and then going back into the, again, to the church, we need to open our doors and pray. You know, I don't know about you, but, you know, I was coming up. We did the concerts. We did the conferences. You know, the revivals and the preachers, you know, and everything. But when it came to praying, you know, you'd be good if a third of the members show up. For prayer. You know, just 2 hours of prayer or noonday prayer. You couldn't get anybody to come to church. Now, we need prayer. We need that noonday prayer back. We need those times in the evening prayer. We need to get back to some show enough, you know, log cabin moments where we call on the name of Jesus, but now we're more informed. So we call the name of Jesus and then wait to get an answer from him and then go do it, you know.
Then go do it,
And so I'm glad that you are with us tonight. I really am so happy that you were gracious enough to have this conversation with me. And, you know, and this talk, and, you know, I told you when I called you, so even my daughter and I had this conversation. She was dating a young man, and he was a white guy, and they broke up because couldn't get a clear understanding of what happened. For him, it was not a big deal. You know, other people have died too, you know, and, you know, I tried to explain it to him, and it just didn't work out, and, and so now we got this other problem here where you know, our young people, some of our young people don't get it. They don't get it. And I think I know why. One of the things I want, I don't know, where did you go to school? What city were you raised in?
I'm from Baltimore. So I went to school in, in Maryland.
Okay, so you already know what I'm getting ready to say. You know, we have Black History Month in school. Did you have Black History Month in school? Okay, we have Black History Month. We don't have Black History sections and portions in our history books in the classroom, but we have Black History Month, and we talked about this kind of stuff. I don't see that in the school system today. I'm sorry. I just
But you know what? Even in my school system, we talked about it, but it was kind of it was skated across. It wasn't in the detail that we have. Like, I remember reading this book by a rabbi, Rabbi Daniel Lappin, I believe his name is, and it's in the book is titled Thou Shall Prosper, right? And what made me pick up the book to read it is because he's a Jewish rabbi. And, you know, just read it in the Bible, and it's, you know, it always says how, you know, the Jewish are blessed and it's God's people and So I wanted to learn a little bit more about the Jews. Like, well, what made them so blessed or what made them God's people? And, I like, what he wrote just really helped me so much. And he said that, you know, people think that they are the richest, they are the smartest, and, you know, the most savvy in business. And that's just not true. He said that what they do is they make sure that the generation before them knows the details of the Holocaust. Every generation, they don't wait until they learn it in school. They don't wait until they go to the museum. Every generation, they are set down in their home from little kids, and they understand the dynamics that the Holocaust made on their people and the importance of them being able to stick together the way that they did even back then and bringing the Jews back together. That was one dynamic. When I read that in the book, I literally put the book down and I started crying, thinking, like, man, that's what we lost. We have tried so hard to get away from what happened to us. We tried so hard to assimilate, to look like, to be like, to make ourselves feel like that we're just as good as, that we stopped really letting every generation understand what happened. And not you know, a woe is me. We are so sensitive and we can't get over it. You know, oh, forget it. It happened such and such 100 years ago. Just get over it. No, this is a repeat that every child should know. And it's not just in the African-American community. In any mm-hmm. culture, whatever it is that created a disruption in that culture and demanded them to band together, they should always know that. They should never, ever forget it. And I feel like our culture dropped the ball in that, trying to be just as good as, trying to make ourselves feel like, you know, we are just as good as, and not really wanting to associate ourselves with, my grandmother was a slave, my great-grandmother was a slave. We want to disassociate ourselves with it when that is the thing that showed us who we really were, you know, who we really are. Mm-hmm. Like, remember, my last name is Strong. So we have a reference to where our strength came from, but we forgot to spread that message through generation and generation. And another thing that he said, like, not only do they sit down and make sure each generation know, you know, where they came from, but they also make sure that they read. You know, every Jewish person, that when you go in their house, if they don't have a library book, are considered, you know, illiterate in their culture. Like, they're frowned upon, like, oh, you don't read? You know, and then he said, when, you know, we think that they have the advantage in the business world because they're so smart. No, it's because that same band together that they have. So he's a businessman in, let's say, Atlanta, and he's going to New York to do business. Well, he called the synagogue in New York, letting them know that he's going to be in New York. And let's just say his industry is textile. Well, I'm going to be in New York. My industry is textile. They'll find someone in that synagogue in New York who's in the textile industry to meet him when he comes and show him around. And it keeps that their business. It's not that we're segregating ourselves away from everybody to keep our business within ourselves, but because now I've met a man in New York that's in the same industry that I'm in, why not do business with him?
That's right.
So we really learn a lot from their culture and how they have been able to preserve the integrity of something so heinous that happened to them.
Wow. You're right about that. It does begin at home. It does begin at home. It does begin with the first voices that our children hear. And I have to take responsibility for that myself. You know, I do need to sit down and have these conversations with our children. We talk to them about Jesus, especially if you're in a Christian home and you're PK.
Mm-hmm.
We talk to them about Jesus and that history.
Yep.
We also have a natural history that that is prevalent and needs to be, you know, understood. You know, I was talking to my children last night, and I didn't want to scare them. You know, I didn't want to cause fear in them. I didn't want to put fear in them, but I could not just let this whole ordeal just go by and they not know. I didn't want them watching the videos, but I had to tell them, I don't want you to watch this video because they're on the internet. I don't want you. If you see this, don't watch it. But now I've explained to them what happened and why.
Right.
So they don't.
Right.
They're tempted. And and so, but I don't want the education of African American culture to begin with the video of violence.
I want it to
begin somewhere else. So that's how it should be. We should have this topic of discussion in every home. And I think every home pretty much unsettled right now. I said, you know, the turn of life has changed. Perspectives have changed because of these turn of events now. I don't know why these two deaths seem to have really had a very harsh impact on us. I don't know why, but this here, it seems to have changed a lot of people's perspectives. And my daughter was saying, I asked her, you know, how are your friends talking? And she said, a lot of them aren't. They don't know what to say.
Wow.
They don't know how to respond.
Wow.
My daughter went to a very mixed cultured school in Atlanta, and so she has white friends and black friends, and they're all quiet.
But you know
what?
In that silence is, but in that silence is where that sound call of action would really be just needed. Mm-hmm. Because in that silence,
yeah,
you can have people to take so many different, you know, approaches. You know, you can have the guys, it's like, you know what, this is not going to happen to me. I'm going to make sure that this don't happen to me. And then he's just as trigger happy as a cop. Then here we have something that's just as horrible, because now we have people taking, you know, matters into their own hands. Or we can sit them down and say, use your anger or use your passion in a different way. Here's what you do. You know, this is where that need for call to action to be like now. This is what we do now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. What do we do now? That's the big word. You know, while you were talking, I thought about something. You know, we were looking at this when Rodney King was brutally beaten.
Yeah.
He wasn't killed, but, you know, he was brutally beaten, and we were watching it then.
Yeah.
And I remember how the riots began in L.A., and that was something to watch. You know, there was a I don't know if you remember this, but the truck driver that was pulled out of his truck, he was beaten.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was an altercation in Michigan, and a the white supremacist group, and that I can't remember her name right now, but she threw herself on to one of the opposing protesters because they were getting ready to kill that man. And she stopped and she said, if we do this, then, you know, we're just like them.
Yeah.
And I'm remembering the history of violence as I came up.
Yeah.
But I'm going back in the days that I wasn't here.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember helping one of my children study Martin Luther King, and nobody knew that Martin Luther King's mother was killed in a church playing the organ. And we knew that a black gunman entered the church and killed him. No one knew that his brother was found, Martin Luther King's brother was found drowned to death in his pool.
No.
In the backyard. No one knew that.
Wow.
And and so there's a history here of murder and violence here in this race that we need to know that these people are. The enemy of God is after us. That is the ultimate answer to the question why. The enemies of God hate us, not just us. He hates humanity. But since we are the minority, it is the minority that he's trying to infiltrate and destroy, and then it causes division, not just among us, but among us and other races as well. And this is the plight of the enemy. And if we let him divide us, then he wins.
That's true.
He wins. And and so my prayer tonight is that we don't let him win.
Absolutely.
I'm going to say this. He's already a loser. The devil is a liar.
Absolutely.
You say. But he's also a loser. But here in this way that we can convey our feelings and how we see things, we actually have to inform the enemy that he doesn't win. He doesn't get this. This is not his win. You know, this is our win.
Absolutely.
So I thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a really, really short break, and we'll come back and talk about Erica.
Okay.
Who she is. And I'm hoping I can get some of that testimony out of you. When I heard you speak the first time, my face fell off like 5 times. I picked my face up off the floor quite a few times to hear a testimony. I'm like, girl, and you smiling? Forgive.
Right.
Oh, Lord, you know. You all that listening, I try to get you guys to call in enough time and raise your hand and ask questions and have a voice. If you want, we can still do that when we come back. I'm pretty sure Erica doesn't mind. But then at the end of you guys have to hear this woman's testimony. It's ridiculous. I've never heard anything like it in my life. I was like, this will make a good movie, you know. I'm a film writer, so I'm thinking in my mind, how do I put this in a script?
Right.
So, I don't mean to make light of that at all, but your story is amazing.
Trust
so
me,
when we come back.
That's something I've been asked,
we're going to talk about that, you and I.
Okay.
We have some conversation. We're going to take a small, short break, and then we come back. We're going to talk about Erica Strong, who she is, and the wonderful testimony behind this woman's name. We'll be right back.
Hey,
word. Neutral word. This second segment is all about me and my book. But it's calling in the ask question. Man, technology is something else.
This segment is brought to you by Shulamite Women Magazine, an online magazine for today's Christian women. Get real talk on the real issues at ShulamiteWomen.com.
That's what you were saying?
I wanted to know. Even the whispers, it probably just took a whisper.
This show segment is brought to you by Rise Management and Consulting Firm. Rise Management and Consulting Firm is helping you rebuild your credit. Learn how to understand your credit, read your credit score, understand your credit rights, repair your credit, legally watch your credit score improve within 30 days. You'll get consultations, unlimited email access, and 10% off your first product purchase. For more information, visit www.risemcf.com. That's www.risemcf.com. Or visit them on Facebook, Rise Management and Consulting Firm, helping you rebuild your credit.
Thank you for joining me again. We're back. Thank you to Rise Management and Consulting Firm, our sponsors for tonight, as well as Shulamite Women Magazine and ShulamiteWomen.com. For more information on those companies, you can go to their website and visit them. And hey, you have a few more weeks to get in on sponsorship on the Glam Network Radio. I'll do a personal voiceover just for you and present your product and service in a way that is professional just for you. We'll come back and have you as a sponsor. $10 a month will get you sponsored for the next 6 months. For more information, you can email me info@thetotalwomanglam.com. Also, visit the website, thetotalwomanglam.com, for more information on guests that we've had already. And by the end of the year, we'll have 50 to 60 guests, and that drop-down menu just hit Media Project 2016, and you'll be able to find all of those wonderful people that I've interviewed so far and those that I'll be interviewing in the future. So tonight we have my wonderful guest tonight. Her name is Erica Strong. She's a motivational speaker and life coach. She has a love for impacting lives and witnessing true transformations through her down-to-earth practical approach to life trials and how to overcome them. Erica Strong's story is riveting. Let me say that again. It's riveting, powerful, and just plain juicy, if I could say that, to say the least. Some of us would have never been able to walk a mile in her shoes, and I do mean that. I have a mantra, Erica. You can't walk a mile in my shoes, but you can walk the same mile in your own shoes. And I don't know if I could have survived walking that mile in your shoes. I don't know. I can't. I got it set up, so just in case we run a little overtime, because I don't want to rush you. I know you tell this story very well. Erica, you have a book, Finish Strong, and you motivate and inspire, but there's always a foundation where this stuff always begins. And so Finish Strong began as a journey for you as a married woman. And I'm going to be quiet and just let you tell it because I can't. I'll put myself on mute so y'all can't hear me say, oh, my gosh. You know, I'm just, you go ahead and tell us where Finish Strong came from.
Well, actually, Finish Strong is the end of that trilogy of a title that I have is Love Strong, Stand Strong, Finish Strong. Because because of my story and testimony, it took those three things. I had to learn how to love strong.
Mm-hmm.
I had to learn how to stand in that love so that I could finish strong. And so that's the trilogy of the title. But, I mean, and that's the trilogy of our lives, like in anything that we're doing, you know, learning how to love our way through it. And, you know, people think, oh, that's the pansy way of doing it, or that's the passive way of doing it, but that's the most powerful way of getting through anything in your life is to find that love that God says that that's inside of you already, that love that you were already created to have and to dwell in and to flourish in, find it, stand in it so that you can finish strong. But like you said, it came from, you know, this the book kind of evolved from my life, you know, my testimony. And a lot of times people, you know, everybody have a story, and everybody have a story that can be written in the book. But my story really came from journals that I had to encourage myself. You know how the word to encourage yourself? It's like I had to sit through, you know, nights of tears and depression and crying, writing hours after hours just to get it out. You know how sometimes you feel so full of you don't know what, so anxiety, depression, pain, hurt, and it's like you're just going to bust and you got to find a way to get it out. Well, getting it out for me was writing in my journal. And the more I wrote in my journal, the better I would feel. And so I remember after a couple of years after the first marriage, Crystal, how much? Where do you want me to start? Because you know it's so much.
You know what? I know it's so much. And okay, so let me see if I can give an introduction. Let me ask the right questions here. Let me go back in interview mode.
Okay.
Okay. So this came Finish Strong is a trilogy of Love Strong and Stand Strong. Okay. So this is a 3-part series. Your life is a trilogy, girl. So I get it. Finish Strong
is
where I come in. It's 3 parts.
Yeah.
So I came in at the finish line. Okay. And so this is your journey in your personal life as a married woman. And so how many times were you married?
Twice.
Uh-huh. I just wanted that to be the first thing, you know, bam.
Yeah.
Twice. You've been married 2 times. Mm-hmm. And so the first marriage ended in divorce, and and how did it end, and how did it impact you?
Well, my husband was an auditor for an airline, and so traveling for him was a part of the job. So, you know, we had just had our daughter. She was she was a couple months old, and by the time she was, I would say, about 11 months old, you know, he went on a business trip that would just take him 2 weeks to, you know, go and audit a station and come on back. We had just opened up my second salon. So, you know, a lot of good things was happening in my life. I had my daughter. I had my new business. And, you know, just my husband, we had rededicated our lives to God. And we were, you know, found a church home. I mean, it was like the dream of, you know, the life that you always wanted. And so he goes away to, you know, on his business trip. 2 weeks in, I'm calling like, so, hey, when are you coming home? And, you know, of course, we're talking to you the whole time that he's gone. But after the 2 weeks, I'm realizing he's not making any plans or letting me know, you know, pick me up from the airport. I'm like, so, hey, when are you coming back? It was just a casual question. Like, hey, hon, when are you coming back? You know, I was getting, you know, other friends to help us with the baby. You know, getting back and forth to daycare, I just want to know, when are you coming back? He said, well, you know what, I decided if I'm not coming back. I'm done. I'm over this. And so, of course, it just took me by surprise because we weren't having any issues. It wasn't like, you know,
I knew
that he was leaving and never coming back. All of his stuff was still in the closet. And that was so funny because that was my first reaction. I heard his voice say that, but I'm looking at all his stuff still there. And I was like, well, wait a minute. Well, what about your clothes? Why did I think about his clothes? I still to this day have no idea. Well, what about your clothes? Well, you know what? Whatever you can't sell, give it to Goodwill because I'm not coming back. And that's
You said you asked him, what did you want him to do with his clothes?
Yeah, why in the world am I thinking about somebody's clothes?
After all of that, I'm going to be the devil's advocate for a second. So did you think about putting his clothes like Bernie did in the Wait Next Hell and just kind of setting the mug on fire?
Never.
You know, did you go through anger?
Never.
Did you think about any of that? Mm-hmm.
I think
wow.
I was numb. I couldn't believe that he really said that to me. You know, I was so numb. I couldn't even think to do anything, like, but stay in the bed and cry. And cry, and wake up and cry, and wake up and cry, realizing that this was true, hearing his voice say that to me over and over again. And my daughter, at that time, she was already a daddy's girl. So she would be, I don't want my daddy, and, you know, just crying, and I'm crying with her, like, me too.
Right, me too, right.
You know, me too. So, you know, just just the shock and awe of that, you know, just took my life into this whole whirlwind of depression, and I mean, I got so deeply into this depression that I would wake up, do all of my spurts of crying and going to sleep, and then I am crying to God, like, why didn't you just kill me? Why am I still awake? You know, why can't you just end my life? You know, I am, like, wanting to die. I'm not wanting to live anymore. I'm not seeing that I have a daughter that loves me, businesses that, you know, that are doing well. I'm not seeing any of that. All I saw was deep, dark depression and wanting to die.
Now, Erica, you said something. You said life was good. You had just opened your second salon. She's a stylist, by the way, you guys. You opened your second salon. You just had a baby. Your life is rededicated to the Lord. Hubby got a good job, apparently, if he's traveling like that. And so in your eyes, life is good. And then you get hit with this blow out of nowhere. And
out
now
nowhere.
Life has to change for you. And so I remember you telling us at the event, What Hurt You testimony, you know, discovered that he was having an affair and this woman was well known and all of that. And so here you are in a city where everybody knows you.
Everybody
Can you talk
knows
about
me.
That
yep.
for a second?
Yeah, like we were in a city where everybody knew me because I had one of the largest salons at the time, and I had commercials that was running all over the place. I was an educator for a company, so I traveled and trained other stylists in my area. I mean, I was always, you know, like, and then because I wasn't from that area, I was the only girl named Erica in that area that did hair. So it made it real easy for people to know exactly who I was. But what made it so hard is when he told me that he was gone, it wasn't until about 2 weeks later he called me back and said, well, you know, let me let you know this before you find out from anybody else. I am with, and it was an R&B singer. I am with her now. You know, this is where, you know, this is what I decided to do. And so, of course, now he's letting me know this before the BET Awards come because he's escorting her to the BET Awards. He's letting me know this before Essence did the article announcing their engagement, but we were still married. He let me know this before he appeared in one of her videos. So as he started coming out a little bit more, visual in all of her stuff, people started asking questions. Wait a minute, isn't that Erica's husband? So it
was
a nightmare because everybody that knew the girl from, you know, the girl that wasn't from here, the girl that did hair, the only one that did, you know, that had the commercials that was running on TV, everybody knew who I was and everybody wanted to know, did her husband really leave her for an R&B singer? And yeah, he did.
Wow. And so now you got to function. You have to get on with your life. And you go home, you visit with your family, you recover. And then, Erica, it happens again. This is the part where my face hit the floor.
Before we even get to that one, let me tell you where the turning point for that the first one was, I was depressed, and I was angry, and I was sad, but I was still functioning. I was putting that mask on. I was showing up to work. I was pretending like everything was okay, but I was secretly wanting to die. And it's crazy because you don't know what people are going through. You know, we wear this mask and we try to pretend like everything is okay, and it's not. And which is why we really should be sensitive to other people, because you never know where they are in their life. Some may just be better at masking it than others, but you just never know. Because it could have just been one thing that somebody said to me. Yeah, it could have been one thing in those weak moments of mine that somebody could have said something to me, and I could have just went home and just taken a bottle of pills and just ended it because of something that somebody said that was on top of the pain that I was already feeling. But I remember when the article was printed on them in Essence. And when that article was printed, I got online because I figured, you know what, I am not going to keep letting people take me for granted. I'm going to say something because this is not right. You know, how can you publish something like this? You need to check to make sure that he is, you know, he's not married. You know, I mean, I was upset. So I went online and I started writing the editor, and I was just telling the editor, you know, this is unfair. You should check your sources. You should always, you know, you should find out these things before you print them. I mean, I really went in with the editor. So as I'm sitting at the computer checking for my grammar, making sure that, you know, I don't come off as this angry wife, but this wife is just informing you that that's my husband that you just wrote about, I literally heard God say, I am your avenger. And I sat there thinking, like, no, that's just me. I just don't want to send it. Nope, I'm sending it. And God said, I am your avenger. I love them too. And when I judge, I don't ask who started it. So I clearly knew that I was not supposed to send it. I sat there and I deleted every last one of those words. And I cried and I cried and I cried because I felt so defeated. I felt like God wasn't letting me, you know, do what I felt like was best for me. But he said something that really just started that whole cycle of love was, I love them too. Now, think about it. I was born and raised in church. And born and raised in church,
you know,
with that
better.
Whole judgment. Yeah, you know better. And God don't love you. God angry, God mad. God going to strike you down. You know, he going to kill you in a second. So I'm thinking, like, you still love them, and you know what they did? You know what they're doing? You know, they're sleeping together. They're not married. He's married. You know, they're adulterers. I mean, yeah, I could think of every sin in the book. But he said, I love them, too. I love them, too. And it made me stop what I wanted to do, and I erased all the words, and I did not do anything to them. And, like, years later, it came full circle where literally both of them have come to me and apologized. But, I mean, the way that God just orchestrated it.
What happened?
They have eventually come and both have apologized. You know, but,
wow.
But even the way that apologies had come, it was like they couldn't do anything but apologize. They would have felt crazy if they didn't, you know. But I did nothing to them, and I like I see now why it made such a big difference for me to be obedient.
Okay, wait. You can't throw that at me right at this move. On, I gotta stop. You know, I thought about Isaac when Isaac went to reclaim the wells of his father, and he made money in that land where his forefather had been. And then they threw him out of the city because Isaac was making it happen. And they threw him out, and he ended up in the valley. And so Isaac never lost focus. Hey, it's in my blood. I'm wealthy. So I'll tell you what, then I'll just dig some more wells. Back then it was the digging of the wells and the water. And he fell three times. But right before the last well sprung forth water, those same people that threw him out of the city came back and had dinner with Isaac. Isaac asked them to stay and eat. And they fellowshiped and had dinner. And Isaac released them. He forgave them. That's how I look at this. He forgave them. And then the following moments, that's when that last well that he dug sprung up a well of water. You know? And and that's where we know where Rehoboth, that's where we get Rehoboth from. And so I'm listening to you, and I'm saying, you know, people, when you leave it alone and you let God vindicate you, Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm.
you don't have to say anything. You know,
they may
not come back while you're blinking. They may not come back while you're yet alive, but they will.
Right.
And and they will. They themselves will pay recompense for the damage they caused
mm-hmm.
you and repent. And so, that's a very deep. Now I know that letter was good that you wrote. It had to be.
It was good.
I know you let it
rip. It was good. It was one of those letters that they would have printed it, they would have published it, and they would have been like, let's get her on. And then it would have been a whole war in the media about all this. It would have been a frenzy of negativity.
Wow. And then affecting
mm-hmm.
your daughter as well. So that wouldn't have not have been a good thing. And
mm-hmm.
so, Erica, I heard this. And all of the, my girlfriend, Marlo Moore, we played her song at the beginning of the show. She was sitting next
mm-hmm.
to me, and I was looking at her. She was looking at me like, what? Because then it happened to you again. And this is where
yeah.
I had to pick up not just my face, but the pieces of it off the floor
yeah.
because I couldn't believe
yeah.
it. I can't believe she's saying this to me. Now, you
mm-hmm.
recovered. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And you're moving
mm-hmm.
forward as best you can,
mm-hmm.
and I know there's some things in there that we're not going to be able to get into, but
right.
here you are again, and this time
mm-hmm.
you meet someone else, and
mm-hmm.
this is a man of God, as we say, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Right.
You really thought you struck gold then, right?
Yeah. I really did,
give me some history.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, I was so obedient with when God said, I am your avenger, and I did nothing. And, I was obedient when he said help, because I was so depressed, and I just used to cry all the time and, you know, asking God, you said that you wouldn't put more on us than we can bear, and I can't take it. It's just too much. And he said, help other people. And I started helping other people. I was so obedient. I started helping other people. I started just, you know, taking the focus off myself. I started healing. So 7 years later, you know, I'm introduced to this man of God, like you say, and I feel like this is the gift from God for being so obedient, and not so much because of his title. So I just want people to understand that you don't have to marry somebody that's a pastor, bishop, apostle, whatever, because
come
if he is a man that loves God and understands
mm-hmm.
the mandate that God has on a husband and a family man and in the church and all that, then you are safe and you're good. And that's what I felt like I had, not the title, but a man that truly
yes.
loved God. I didn't feel like I was safe
mm-hmm.
because of his title. I felt like I was safe because I felt like it was a man that knew God's word and was living God's word. So,
yes.
you know,
yes.
when we met, like, it was no reservation was there. This is 7 years later. I'm healed. I'm whole. I'm functioning. I'm doing well in my career. I wasn't like the single mother looking for the father to come and help, you know, raise the child. I was good, and I was healthy, and I was whole. So when we met, I felt like surely God just kissed me on my forehead and said, honey, this is your gift, you know. And he didn't live here in Atlanta. He lived in another city. So, you know, it would cost me to have to relocate and all of that stuff just to accommodate our marriage, which was a fairy tale. I mean, he was everything that I thought that I wanted in a husband and a mate, just in his sensitivity and how compassionate and kind he was, just everything. I just thought, like, this was it.
Yes.
This was it.
Wow.
So, yeah, you're right. Struck gold was my, like, I have a man that knows God's word. That was gold for me.
Yep. So you struck gold is what you thought, and
mm-hmm.
then the tides turned. And
mm-hmm.
so if we can fast forward just a little bit. And the tides turned,
mm-hmm.
and this man
mm-hmm.
is now treating you differently. He's very curt with you, very short with you,
mm-hmm.
not spending time with
mm-hmm.
you, not spending time at home,
mm-hmm.
on the road,
mm-hmm.
traveling all the time. And you made
mm-hmm.
I don't want to say gruesome because that's not the word, but you made a very awesome discovery. And
mm-hmm.
what was that discovery, Erica?
Well, the thing was, he wasn't on the road traveling. He was right there in the city just deciding to not
okay.
be at home. You know, he would
oh
get up 4 o'clock in the morning, get out of the bed, and just be gone. Like, no explanation or nothing. And would expect me to be ready and, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed every Sunday to go to church and pretend like everything is okay. So I started feeling like I was a fraud. Like, this is not working. This is not what I signed up for. You know, I'm number one. I have a reverence for God that I'm not going to play with Him, and I'm not going to play with His people. So if fraud in the people is a part of the plan, just go ahead and count me out. You know. So as the more curt he had become, the more distant that he had become, the more I started to pray, because I just couldn't understand it. Because at this point, it's about 6 months into our marriage. 6 months. You're still supposed to be in honeymoon mode. I just relocated to a whole other city. You know, am I, you know, what am I doing wrong? So, of course, you know, if you are a woman that really, you know, want to know if it's you, you start thinking, well, what have I done? What about me? What have I done to bring this? You know, I started pointing it to myself, and I started fasting, asking God, okay, how did I get here? And then how do I get out of it? Like, this is not what I signed up for. I don't want to sit in a marriage that's like feels like a fraud. Like I just couldn't get it. So instead of beating myself up like I did the first time, let me just fast. And I started fasting and asking God to just show me, what is it? Like, what did I miss? Can you please just show me how, you know, how did I get here? And he did. He showed me. So one day when he's out for hours and hours, and I think this is probably like a 24-hour span before I had seen him again, and I am now looking on my on his iPad, and I'm looking for how to get back to Atlanta. I need to get back to Atlanta to get back to what I know, where my comfort is, where my stability is, where my career is, because I was a stay-at-home wife that upon his request. So I'm on his iPad and I'm looking for, you know, good schools and where to go and where to take my children, you know, just looking for my way back. And while I'm on his iPad, an email comes through, and it's from him. And so I'm thinking, like, well, why did he just email himself? And so, of course, you know, I opened it. So when I opened the email, it was a email from him to him, and it was a picture of a naked man. I'm going to pause for a second.
Yeah, so that's where my face, that's where the rest of me hit the floor, Erica. I can't imagine what was going on here. Now, with the first time you got that blow, you asked this man what he wanted you to do with his clothes. Okay. There seemed to have been an automatic disconnect for you. But here, you fasted and you prayed, and now this is in your face again. What's the first thought that you had after you saw that?
Like, complete rage. Rage that you knew that I was, you knew that where I had already been. You knew where my life had taken me before we met. And you brought me into this. How could you? So it was complete rage. But I'm so grateful that it was 24 hours again before I saw him. So within that 24 hours, it gave me enough time for me to go through anger, go through rage, go through fear. Like every emotion that you can imagine is what I went through. And then in going through all of those emotions, it brought me all the way back to compassion. Now, how do I go from rage to fear to anger to depression to crying to compassion? And what led me to compassion was when I started thinking about what, you know, everything that God had done. So I started thinking, okay, I asked him to show me what it was, and he did. So he's not going to show me anything that's going to cause chaos. He's not going to show me anything that's going to make me, have me go to jail or have him go to the morgue. he's not going to show me anything that's going to create even more evil. So, okay, God, now why did you show me this? You know I asked, but then you, like, why did I have to know this? And I started seeing it from the lens of love that he made me look at the last one with, okay, so why is it that he is, you know, why is his life like this? How lonely is that lifestyle? And, like, how long has he been hiding? You know, it was like compassion came for me. So by the time I actually saw him again, it was more of like it was more that I needed to find a way to talk to him and let him, you know, let him know what God had showed me, and then how it was that God was speaking through me. Because I needed to find a way that he could understand that God loved him, understand that God was for him, and that he had to get himself right. I felt like I saw myself in the middle of two worlds, the world that he was trying to hide everybody from and the world that everybody knew him to be. And here I am stuck in the middle to speak into his life. Now, how crazy is that?
That's not even, I don't know if crazy is the word. You know, the Bible says, I think in Romans, I think it is, not to repay evil for evil. And, you know what? I'm going to pull that scripture up because when I heard you tell that story, that's what I heard. It is Romans chapter 12 and verse 17. It says, do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. That's the New International Version. The New Living Translation says, do things in such a way that everyone can see you are honorable. You know? You have to, no matter what is done to you, you can't repay evil for evil. Because it's not just about you, but other people are watching.
Right.
Your children are watching. And God is watching, you know.
Right.
And so you got now you arrived to this place of compassion for someone who you thought had your best interest at heart, had your heart, and knew where you had come from. And here he is, caught in his own confusion, in his own world. And so what do you say to him when you see him after those 24 hours?
You know what? And I'm so grateful for them 24 hours, honey, because those 24 hours, it just made me really just go into, you know, what it was, not that I wanted to say, but more of what God wanted me to say, you know, more of what God wanted me to say. And what God wanted me to say was, you know, that I love you. I can heal you. You're whole. And he wanted me to let him know that he still loved him, even though he knew what he was doing. And I think I shared with you just how the agony that I had to go through just to even tell that story. I mean, just to be able to have that conversation. The agony of feeling like I'm Esther going before the king. The agony of I just don't know what's going to happen to me because I know something that's probably very sensitive. You know, like the agony of I was afraid. I was scared.
Wow. Wow. And yet, compassion is what you have in your hands at this point.
Right.
I remember, Eric, I remember something that happened to me. You said something about I wanna rewind for a second. I believe it was after the first incident and the Lord told you to go back to the shop and have Bible study or a book club or some sort. And I remember laughing at you. I remember laughing at you because the way you told it, it was so open and so honest, but it was also kind of, you know, had a very comical flair to it. And I said, I said, this woman is just like me. You just, even the most tragic things that happen to you, you got a way of presenting it to where people will laugh, but then they'll think, wait a minute. wait a minute. What did she just say? Jesus on the cross, as he was suffering and bleeding and dying for, not just for the sins of the world, but specifically those that have already passed away before he got on the scene. And then he was dying for those that were killing him. And then he was dying for those sons to come. And so here he is on the cross dying for those that are killing him. And in the middle of bleeding and dying, he pardons the thief. He ministers to the thief. And here you are, in the middle of your death, because this is about the second time you're dying. You're in the middle of death, and you have to minister compassion to the one that is killing you.
Yes, that's exactly how
to the one that is killing you. I know it felt like that. And so when you began to talk, Erica, I felt this awesome story, forgiveness and love and compassion, but I also heard triumph behind you, you know. And so talk about once compassion hit your camp and you begin to show this man compassion, now you got to pick up the pieces, which after you do what God is saying to you, there really aren't a lot of pieces to pick up, because then there's this grace that comes on you. And with this grace, there comes this wind, and you shift to Atlanta, okay? And you start putting your life back together. And this is where you start living for Erica, right? Is that a fair assessment? You start living for Erica again?
That's true.
And so living for Erica meant what? What did that mean?
That meant, like, reminding myself, number one, who I am, because those kind of blows could really tear you down. It could tear your self-esteem down. It could tear your will to, you know, move forward. It can tear all those things down. So the only way that I could get back to the place of living for Erica is I had to first figure out, okay, who is Erica? Because Erica is not identified by a Mrs. She's not identified by First Lady. She's not identified by hairstylist, celebrity, all of the titles. That's not who Erica is. Erica is who I am at my core. So it was like that digging down to the core of who I am that I had to find out. I had to find out that I was love. I had to find out that I was compassion. I had to find out that I was joy. I had to find out that I was peace. I had to find out that I was redeemed. I had to find out that I was victory. Everything that God is, everything that was created, that he said I was created in his image, I found all of those attributes of who I am, and that's where living for Erica started, because I wasn't living for Erica wounded. I wasn't living for Erica guarded. I wasn't living for Erica trying to look for somebody to come and lick my wounds and make me better. I was living for Erica in such an empowered and a strong notion of this is who I am. I can stick my stake in the ground because nothing can move the anchor that I know of who I am. So storms can still come. Things can still come and disrupt my peace. Things can still come and try to make me waver. But because I know who I am, it won't throw me off course. It will make me wobble a little bit, but I'll bounce right back into position because I know who I am, you know?
You just preached. I'm here to open up the PayPal link, so tithes and offerings can come on in. You preach this now. And so Erica is now, you know, who we are seeing now. You have reached another level of success in your trade, and people know who you are. You're confident in it. I was real mad when I found out your hair was natural. I was so mad. You know, I've been teeing creamy cracks for so long. I'm like, I can't do it. Now I know where to go. But I'm so, if I can say this, we've not really gotten to know each other outside of the event. But if I can say, I'm so proud of you, godly proud of you, for being the example that you are and going to the places where God is sending you now, in those places where some of us can't go, but needed. The voice of God is needed. And so proud of you for shaking a tail feather and talking to yourself and saying, look, girl, get up, put your pantyhose on, comb your hair, arch your eyebrows, and get your nails done. Let's go. Let's do this. And that's what I wanted other women to hear from you tonight, you know. So let's just say that there's a woman listening tonight, either live or by recording, and she's in that place. She's sitting in her car and she's weeping because she needs to find herself. She's in this marriage or relationship and she's finding out it's not what she thought it was. What message will you give to her right now at this moment?
The first thing I'll say is don't take it personal. Because it's not about you. It's not about who you are not. It's not. I'm not good enough. I'm not this. I'm not that. I'm not slim enough. I'm not tall enough. I'm not. My hair's not long enough. Whatever it is that we can point the finger back to us and say it's because of us that I'm not. And even with somebody else pointing the finger, like you're not slim enough. You're not sexy enough. You're not whatever. You're not. It's not about you. Because when somebody is, you know, inflicting pain on another person, it's not about the pain that they're giving you. It's about the pain that they're feeling themselves. So I would say my first thing is don't take it personal. Because whatever it is, you have to figure out what, like I said about myself, you have to figure out who you are. And you are not that situation. One of the things I learned is everything is going to change. Always. The only thing that's consistent in life is change. So what you feel right now in this moment is not what you're going to feel next month, next week, maybe in another hour from now. So don't make a decision based on a temporary circumstance, because I promise you this came to pass. It came to pass. So nothing is going to stay around, not anger, not depression, not anything. It's only going to stay as long as you nurse it and hold on to it. So when I say find out who you are, the more that you find out who you are, the more that you connect yourself with your oneness with God, the more you'll release those things that's holding you back from finding that freedom. Because it's not about you, and I'm a living testament that literally all of those crazy things that have happened in my life, I should either be somewhere in a crazy, you know, in a mental institution because I couldn't take it anymore. My body should be riddled with some kind of illness because I caused a dis-ease in my body with worry and stress and depression. Or I could be in jail because I didn't know how to handle myself. Or even worse, I could be in a state of the Israelites going around and around and around and around the mountain of me having to keep going through it because I didn't know how to handle it in the first place. When you understand that you come from a place of love, that you respond from a place of love, that you are one with God, nothing and nobody can hold you from that power. So that's where I was starting. That's just so my passion because my heart aches, and not just for women, but for men and women that find themselves hurt or distraught by an occurrence in their lives, and then they get stuck in it. Like, oh, I was molested when I was a kid, so now I don't know how to function. No, you release it and you let it go. You send it love, you send it God's light, and you let it go. Because as long as you center yourself in the offenses, you have fenced yourself in from anything coming in and anything going out. So, you have become your own guard. God is your guard. You extend that love, and you walk as the example that Christ gave us. Christ did not do anything everything he did in love. Everything, which is he could open blind eyes, raise the dead, and find money in the mouth of a fish. I mean, every miracle that Christ did, he said, great works have I done, but even greater will you do. But you can't do it blocked in offense and depression and hurt and pain. You got to let it go.
You got to let it go, and you let it go. Wow. Erica, I'm so grateful to you for gracing our eardrums with your testimony, your story of power, triumph, and influence. You're in all three of those categories today. Thank you so much for joining me even this earlier on the show, and we were able to have girl talk and talk about the issues that are the pink elephant in the room, as we say. Thank you so much. Thank you for giving us, details like that, because, you know, we're so good at putting on the mask, as you said earlier. We put that mask on and we go out and do and be something. And it's not that we're being phony, but we're just being who we are and without feeling, without having the emotion attached to it. We don't want to feel what is attached to our circumstance. We don't want to have those feelings. I want to make sure that if you got your mask on tonight, you know, you don't have to wear it anymore. Cece Winans had a song out. I can't remember the name of it, but the lyrics were, "Take off your mask with me. I see your heart. If you want to stay with me, I need honesty. Don't play with me."
Wow.
And this is what these lyrics were from a song where, you know, they were talking about, she was talking about taking off the mask. And you have to take off that mask. God wants honesty. Mm-hmm. He wants transparency. Mm-hmm. He already knows what's behind it anyway.
He's already known. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So go ahead and just take it off. And that's what I did. I had to learn how to just take that mask off, and then I leave it off. I don't put it back on. I do put my best foot forward. So do you. We put our best on because at the same time, we represent the kingdom of God and excellence in everything we do. And so we put our best foot forward, but we don't do it when we cover up who we are. You know, so Erica, tell us where we can find you. I know you, you know, you're so busy, we almost missed you tonight. So tell us where we can find you on social media. And you have some really wonderful projects coming up. I don't know if I'm supposed to be able to expose that or not. I'll leave that up to you. But tell us where we can find you.
Absolutely. So my hub is ericastrong.com. So everything that I post on my Facebook page and everything like my events and photo logs and all that stuff is on ericastrong.com. But one of the babies that I always like to direct people to that I absolutely love is my Facebook group page, which is Finishing Strong on Facebook. So you can find me on Facebook. It's Erica Strong on Facebook. Finishing Strong is the group. The letter U, Finish Strong on Instagram, and Finish _ Strong on Twitter. So you can see my whole life is Finishing Strong. And then my salon is Be Strong. My salon is Be Strong Salon in Buckhead. So that's BeStrongSalon.com. So if you just trace the word strong, you will trace it back to me.
Just Google strong. It's all that's Erica's name. I'm gonna have to make my trip to Buckhead and get my mop done, girl. Because I'm just like, my husband is saying, hey, so you still think my cutting is short? I said, yeah. I found somebody who probably can help me out. So I'm grateful for you. Wait, tell us again. Where is the salon again?
The salon is Peachtree in Piedmont on 3232 Peachtree Road, and is Be Strong Salon. So if you go on the website, BeStrongSalon.com, you'll be able to find all of the information. And then, and I am a celebrity stylist, but you don't have to worry about being afraid that, oh, my God, her prices are outrageous, because my heart really is for the marketplace. And when you come into the salon, you really get to feel like you are being treated just as well as the celebrities get treated. There's no difference in the way that I treat my clients, you know, that are – you know, just my regular people and my celebrities, they all get the same, you know, amazing experience, because, like, I know that God put me in the salon not just to do hair. This is a ministry for me.
Wow. Thank you so much. And please look for my face, because I'll be on my way in. This is Glam Network Radio's Crystal P. Willingham. This is Erica Strong. Be strong. She is strong. All strong. Go find her on Facebook, Twitter, and her website is ericastrong.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Erica. Please join me Tuesday. We're back on the air again. 50 to 60 Women, a power, triumph, and influence. I'm so excited to be to get my feedback from you. So email me, info@thetotalwomanglam.com. If there's anything you want to say, if you think you're a candidate to be interviewed, you can also send me an email. And please put in the subject line, interview me. info@thetotalwomanglam.com. This is the Glam Radio Network. This is Power, Triumph, and Influence. And my name is Crystal P. Willingham. I'm so excited you joined me tonight, and we'll see you again on Tuesday. Thank you so much, Erica. We look forward to seeing
you
again very, very soon.
Thank you.